All right, Second John, probably written at the end of John's life, towards the end of his life. We're not really certain about exactly when he wrote it, and we're actually not even certain about who he wrote it to. He mentions writing it to the elect lady. So was this an actual person? We don't know. Was it a reference to a church? We don't really know. But it's an inspired work of God, so it's to everybody, right? It's to all who believe in Jesus Christ to salvation. Now, the reason why these books, 2nd and 3rd John, are kind of a little, they're not talked about as much, is because there's nothing really new in them. You know, they're like books in the Bible where if we didn't have them, we wouldn't lose anything. Like, we wouldn't lose any doctrinal statement. We wouldn't lose anything. He's just kind of reiterating things to a different group of people. So pretty much anything that you can find in 2nd and 3rd John, you could also find in 1st John. He's just focusing on certain other principles. But it's worth studying, and it's worth going through, obviously, because God decided to make it a book of his New Testament, so we should go through it. Let's begin, though. Verse 1. The elder, which is John, to the elect lady and her children, whom I love in truth, and not only I, but also all those who have known the truth, because of the truth which abides in us and will be there forever. Grace, mercy, and peace will be with you from God the Father and our Lord Jesus Christ, the Son of the Father, in truth and love. I rejoice greatly that I have found some of your children walking in the truth as we receive the commandment from the Father. Now you notice his overuse of the word truth, right? That's because that's the theme of the book. It seems almost like he's using it more than he should, right? He's like, the truth and the truth, and you guys are in the truth, and I'm glad that you're in the truth, and I rejoice in truth that you're in the truth. And it's a little redundant and weird. But the reason why he's getting at this is because that's the theme of the book. The theme of the book is the truth. Now, for John's age, that wasn't a very controversial statement, so he doesn't really go into it too much. In our age, that is a controversial statement. Because we live in an age where we don't believe in absolute truth anymore. The majority of people in our age don't believe in absolute truth. In John's age, they absolutely did. They did believe in absolute truth. Everybody was contending and arguing and reasoning, and it wasn't considered rude to do that. In fact, if you read in the New Testament, it will mention that the apostles used to go to the marketplace and debate with people. You guys have read that, right? In the book of Acts, it says they go to the marketplace. And a lot of us picture like they're going to the Tucson Mall and like arguing with people and getting in their face. That's not what the marketplace was in their day. The marketplace in their day was actually a place that, yeah, people could buy, sell, and trade stuff there. But it was also a place where people could go and dialogue about things. It was like the Facebook chat room of the day, I guess, where you could just like go and you could kind of like debate things and share ideas and expound on them and discuss them in a place. And it was really cool. And that's why the apostles used to go there. So they lived in a day and age where claiming to have absolute truth was not an offensive claim. Everybody claimed to have absolute truth. What they did is they dialogued about it. How can I know if you have absolute truth? Well, I could discuss it with you. And we can maybe get down to what the actual truth is. Our day and age, that's a very offensive thing to say, that I have absolute truth. We think of that as a very arrogant claim. And we'll talk a little about that. But are you guys aware of what I'm talking about when I say that? Those of you guys who are in school, especially, right? In fact, in school you learn about existentialism. You guys know that one, right? No? Madison? Some of you know? That's part of it. Yeah, it's a part of it for sure. That's definitely a part of what existentialists believe. Here's what existentialists believe. It is the dominating philosophical ideal of this age, right? So back in Paul's day, you had Plato and you had Aristotle. We have existentialism. And here's what existentialism states. Existentialism says that existence precedes essence. And what that means is that you exist as a person before you understand who you are as a person. And that means that everybody's essence is different because we all come to different conclusions. So that means that if I believe that when I die I'm going to be absorbed into an all spirit, then that's just my essence, right? That's just what I believe. And that's truth for me. But if Ian believes that there's a God named Allah out there who's going to judge him if he doesn't pray 5 times towards Mecca, that's his essence. And that's okay. You know, because there's no such thing as absolute truth and there's no such thing as reality. We all just kind of do our thing, right? What's that? It does a little bit, right? a lot of Democrats are existentialists. Yeah. And actually, Art brings up a good point, because here's the thing. Even though you guys don't know what a lot of you have never learned about existentialism, it impacts you. Right? Existentialism does impact you whether you know it or not. It will one way or another. Because as I'm describing it to you guys, do you hear echoes of it from people you've talked to? And maybe even ways that you think? Let me give you guys another example. So when you listen to music today, lyrics are interpretive, aren't they? You know, a lot of bands, like, you'll listen to their lyrics and you're like, what the crap is he talking about? And you're like, you'll listen, be like, maybe I'm not listening to it right. And you'll go on Google and you'll type it in, you'll look at all the lyrics, and you're still like, I still don't know what he's talking about. You know, like, it could mean one thing, it could mean another thing, you know, whatever. Or if you've ever watched a movie that doesn't really end, where the ending is interpretive, where you get to the end, you're like, did he live? Like Inception, right? And it ends with the top spinning. If those of you guys who haven't seen it, I'll mention another movie in a sec. But it ends with like a top spinning, and you're like, did he wake up? Or is he still in the dream? And you never know. You know, you never know exactly how it ended. And there's a lot of movies like that where it's kind of up for interpretation. You don't really know how it's going to end. You don't really know how it's going. That's existentialism. Because whatever is true for you, whatever you decide about the ending, that's what the ending is for you. Right? And it's interpretive. Or if you guys have ever heard of abstract art, right? You look at art and it's just someone who threw a paint can at a white canvas, right? And you look at it and you're like, dude, that's nonsense. That's a two-year-old could do that. In fact, I think two-year-olds do that, you know? But then everyone stands around, they're like, well, maybe this represents the chaos of modern society. And they're like going into all these depths, and I bet the artist is like, dude, I just tripped, and, you know, that's what happened. But, hey, you know, if you guys want to buy it for $5,000 and come up with some grand meaning, then I guess you can, you know. But that's abstract art. There's no such thing as definitive meaning. You guys understand that? There's no such thing as definitive right. There's no such thing as definitive wrong. It's just, it's up for everybody's interpretation. So saying what John is saying, that there is a truth out there, and you can know it, and if you're walking in truth, then you are walking in absolute truth. But if you don't have the truth, then you're walking in what? A lie. Right? And John has no problem saying that. We have a problem saying that, though. And let me give you guys some of the reasons why our modern culture disagrees with it. And like I said, I want you guys to dialogue with me about these things. If you guys have heard them, if you guys have questions, please tell me. Let me get into the first one. Absolute truth, first off, actually, let me say this. I forgot to say this before I get into the problems with it. Everybody believes in absolute truth. Everybody believes in absolute truth, whether they accept it or don't. Let me explain this to you. First off, if I say there is no such thing as absolute truth, is that an absolute statement? Yes, it is. So if I say there's no such thing as absolute truth, do I believe in absolute truth? Yes, even though I'm denying it. In order to deny absolute truth, I have to what? Affirm it. So there's no way to get out of it. Everyone believes in absolute truth. If I judge somebody, if I look at you guys and I say, you know what, RJ, you believe in Christianity, and that is so pig-headed, that is so narrow-minded, how could you believe in that? You could easily just turn around on me and you say, well, you think I believe something that's wrong too. So isn't that narrow-minded? How could you say that I'm wrong and you're right? Does that make sense? So you have to affirm absolute truth no matter what. That's one thing. The other reason why everybody affirms absolute truth is because everybody accepts that there's a physical reality and that there's a moral reality. Let me explain that to you. If I were to go into school and say, gravity exists, that is an absolute statement, right? Would anyone get offended? No, because it's physical reality. Everybody accepts that there's a physical reality. If I came into school and you said, hey, and you're in physics class and you raise your hand and you say, teacher, I don't agree with your interpretation of gravity. I think that if I flapped hard enough, I really could fly. And who are you to tell me that I can't do that? In the name of absolute freedom, I'm going to prove it to you, right? They would stop you, right? They would fail you for the class, and they would not listen to you. Because why? There's a physical reality. What we disagree with is whether or not there's a moral reality. Can I say there's an absolute thing as gravity, just like I say rape is absolutely wrong? Right? Can I say both of those things? And that's where the contention lies. Do you guys understand that? Any questions so far before we move in to the problems? Okay, so here's the first problem. This is one of the reasons why atheists, including myself when I was an atheist, disagreed with the existence of absolute truth. When you agree with absolute truth, you have to give up a level of freedom. Let me quote to you Albert Camus, who was a philosopher back in the day. We modern people believe in absolute freedom. Many of us don't believe in God at all. Many of us don't believe in a God that you can even know. Therefore, we believe in no God or no God that you could really know because we believe in freedom. Now, this is the important part. If there was a God we could know, who told us how we had to live, and who gave us the rules and the regulations, well, then we wouldn't be free. But because we believe in freedom, and because we don't believe in the traditional view of God, we are free. Now, what does he mean by that? That's right, right? So if I don't believe in God, then you telling me that it's wrong to, let's say, abuse my kids, or say have sex before marriage, or say go to a church that's not a Christian church, as being a wrong thing, I could look at you and just say, well, that's just your opinion, right? So anything I agree with, I can do, and everything I disagree with, I don't have to do, right? Because I'm free. Now here's I'll give you guys a couple problems with that argument. One last thing before I move into the problems of the argument. I'm just all sorts of off today. But anyway, another reason why they believe it is because it feeds their pride. They may say something like this to us. They say, religious people aren't actually good people. They just do good things because they believe in God. Right? So from that argument, why do we do good things, in their opinion? Because we're afraid of God, right? What would happen to us if we didn't? We would get zapped by a lightning bolt. We'd go to hell. It would be just like someone who is on the Atkins diet can't look at himself as morally superior. Right? If I have heart problems and I cut out cholesterol in my diet, I can't look at other people and be like, I am morally superior to you. Well, no, you're just accepting the fact that if you don't do that, you're going to die. You know? It doesn't make you a good person. It doesn't make you self-controlled. You just realize that there's a physical reality. Just like I can't look at you guys as being good people just because you don't jump off buildings and try to fly. You just recognize that there's a physical reality. Does that make sense? That if you did that, you would die. So that's the way they look at Christians. They say Christians are only good because they think that if they don't do good things, they're going to die. So they're not actually good people. And when they say that, what's hidden under there is actually a very proud statement. Because for the atheist, why do atheists do good things in their own opinion? Because they're good. Because they have freedom to do so. Does that make sense? So when an atheist gives to a charity or respects their neighbor or doesn't go on killing sprees or something like that, they could look at themselves and be like, man, I'm a really good guy. Nobody told me I had to do it, but I just did it because I'm just a good person. You guys understand that? It feeds pride. I don't have to do it, but I choose to do it. Which also answers the question that a lot of Christians have of like, well, why don't atheists just go and do whatever they want? Why don't they just, you know, snort a bunch of coke and kill a bunch of people? Like, why do anything good? This is why. When they do good things, they have the ability and capacity to feel morally superior to everybody, especially to religious people. That's why if you ever discuss morality with an atheist, the second you even start that conversation, they automatically think they're at a higher ground than you. Does that make sense? Because from their perspective, the only reason why you're talking to them about it is because you believe in the boogeyman. And you believe that if you don't talk about it, you're going to get struck dead. They're like, I want to discuss it because I'm interested in what's the reality like, you know, and I'm interested in being a good person. Do you guys understand that? They're instantly at a moral superior ground to you. So those are the reasons why they don't agree with absolute truth. They don't want to believe in it. Here's some problems with that, though. First off, that's not an argument. Not an argument. That's just, I would like there not to be a moral reality. That doesn't prove that there's not a moral reality. Hey, I don't like the fact that gravity exists sometimes, but I still respect it. Does that make sense? And no matter how much I may dislike it, it still exists. There are a lot of things about physical reality I don't like. I don't like the fact that there's the existence of wormholes. I don't like the fact that I'm going to get old one day. I don't like the fact that if I take too many calories in, I'm going to get fat. I don't like a lot of things about physical reality, but I still respect it because of why? Because it's real. So me saying that there's no such thing as a moral reality, does that disprove a moral reality? No. And what if, so the question that we need to bring to our morally ambiguous friends is, what if there is a moral reality that is just as real as physical reality? So what's happening to them is they're ignoring their moral reality. What are they doing to themselves? They're what? They are deceiving themselves, but what's ultimately going to happen to them? What happens if I ignore physical reality? What's going to happen to me? I'm going to die. What's going to happen if I ignore moral reality? I'm going to die, right? It's going to kill me. So they could disagree with it all they want, but they haven't proven anything. They haven't proven anything. Until you actually get to a proof, you can't just say, well, I just don't like to believe in anything. That's okay. You're free to do that. But that's not a smart move, right? You're ultimately going to kill yourself if there actually is one. Another problem, and I'll use myself as an example really quickly before I get into the next problem. When I was an atheist, one of the reasons, one of the major reasons I became an atheist is because I didn't like the fact that the Bible said that pornography and sexual immorality was wrong. Do you guys understand that? I didn't like the fact that the Bible said that that was a wrong thing to do, so I disbelieved it because I wanted to. It was convenient for me. Now, whether I wanted to believe it was bad or not, it didn't change the fact that that sin crushed me. Does that make sense? Even though I ignored it, I was like, oh, no, it's totally cool to do. I can do whatever I want, and I felt free, right? Elsa from Frozen illustrates this very well. No right, no wrong, no rules for me. Got to break through, push the limit, see what I can do, right? You guys seen that movie, right? Right? That's moral people, right? That's atheists today. They're like, dude, I'm free, man. They sing Let It Go all the time. They're like, yeah, no right, no wrong, no rules for me. Get a hold of that one, you feel real good. And when they're living their life, see, it didn't matter whether or not I believed that pornography was right or wrong. The fact of the matter is that pornography hurt me. You guys understand that? And I ignored it for years. But the fact of the matter is, it did start to destroy my life. Now, if any of you guys, any of you religious people, would have pointed that out to me, how do you think I would have reacted, though? What's that?
You're full of it.
You're full of it. You know what you're talking about. You serve your weird God, and I don't really care, right? I would have just gotten angry at you. Because I don't like the fact that you're talking down to me. But once again, if I get angry with you, what does that reveal about me? That I probably know you're saying what? The truth. If I actually thought you were saying something that was a lie, I would just ignore you, right? If somebody came up to me on the street and said, hey, dude, there are unicorns everywhere, and every single time you burp, you kill one, I'd be like, dude, get away from me. You know, like, I don't care if you believe in unicorns. It doesn't mean anything to me. It doesn't affect me. That wouldn't make me angry. I would just ignore you. Does that make sense? Why? Because I know that that's not the truth. The only reason why I would get angry with someone is if they were saying something that what? Reminded me of the truth, the reality. So if you tell one of your friends this, some of this stuff, and they get angry with you, now you know why. Right? If they honestly thought you were crazy and they didn't care about what you thought, they wouldn't get angry. They'd just be like, whatever, dude. Keep believing in the tooth fairy. I don't care. I'll do my thing. Right? But if they get upset, that means that they are hiding something. Now, you guys have any questions about that? About the idea of moral reality? That also points out why the Bible tells us what to do. When God created the law, he wasn't sitting up in heaven and he's like, you know what? I think I'm going to make this illegal. No reason for it. I'm just going to make it illegal. I don't like the fact that people steal, so I'm just going to say not to steal. That's not what happened. When God was making the law, he was directly interested in the moral reality. He realized all he's doing through the law, everything you see in your Bible about thou shalt or thou shalt not, you know what that is? That's God describing the law to you. He's describing a moral reality that already exists. And if you don't agree with it, you're going to kill yourself, whether you know it or not. And this is one of the arguments that we as Christians have for the existence of moral truths. When we look out at reality, it seems like people believe in a moral reality. Does that make sense? Whenever I see an atheist, right, if I'm hanging out with an atheist and let's say I lie to him, he'd probably say something like, you shouldn't have done that. Now, if he doesn't believe in absolute reality, what could I tell him? Says you, right? Who cares? You know, like, dude, I like lying. I think that's cool. Does that make sense? He has no moral objective reality to say that I'm right or wrong. It's just subjective at that point. So they believe in a moral reality. They just don't want to admit it
In Romans 2, it says this: whenever a non-believer does something that agrees with the law, that just proves that the law exists. So when I look at other cultures that don't believe in God or don't believe in our God, say that killing people is wrong, stealing is wrong, lying is wrong, raping is wrong, I look at that and be like, probably because it's wrong. You know, when I see every culture, every society, whether they know God or not, have the same basic rules, it's probably because there's a rule there. Does that make sense? We're basing it on something. I mean, why isn't there a society out there that says stealing and killing is awesome? Why is there no culture that says that? Probably shows that those things are actually wrong. Doesn't matter what society, doesn't matter what culture you grow up in, it's wrong. And I've actually gotten into conversations with atheists where their theology is so jacked that, like, when I point out things like that to them and they get angry, they'll admit to things that I know that they don't believe. I'll say things like, hey, dude, like, do you believe that rape is always wrong? Now, you'll know if you're talking to a real hardcore atheist if they deny that one. If they're just like, well, I mean, it hurts people. You know? I'm like, that's not what I asked. I asked, is it wrong? Is it absolutely wrong for someone to do, no matter what? They're like, well, I mean, I think so. You know, see, that's all they could say in that instant. But it's like, dude, yes, you do. You know that it's wrong. Why don't you just say it? Why won't they say it? That's right. That's right. There's a great debate between a guy, he's a preacher named James White, and he debates one of the atheists, like the top atheist or whatever, named David Silverman. And at one point in the debate, he looks at David Silverman and he says, so what you're saying to me is that all you can go is you could go to Auschwitz, you could see the concentration camps, you could see the death, the graves of all the people that were killed there, and all you could do is you could shake your fist and say, this seems wrong to me. And David Silverman, without missing a beat, goes, yes. That's all I could do. See, but you know that it's wrong. Like, you can look at David Silverman and be, dude, you know it's wrong. Why don't you just say it? Why can't you just admit that it's wrong? That everybody, that it's objectively wrong to commit genocide against a group of people. That it's objectively wrong to rape someone. That it's objectively, it doesn't matter who you are, doesn't matter where you come from, doesn't matter what time period you live in, it is objectively wrong thing to do, right? But they won't admit it, because they can't. So let's move on to the next one. Do you guys have any questions about that one? About the idea of the existence of moral reality?
Yeah, I had like some good conversations with my atheist friend where I heard that target is social.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's what my brother believes as well. My brother's an atheist, for those of you guys who don't know. And I've had conversations like this with him, and that's what he believes. He believes that we evolved to have our morality. A couple problems that I could poke in it for him is humanity is not the first pack species. I mean, we're not the first species to exist because of a pack, like wolves, gazelle, things like that. They're all over. But even those species don't have our morality. Does that make sense? If I observed wolves for long enough, I would observe rape. I would observe rape that would happen in the pack, and other members would watch it, and you know what they would do? Nothing. In fact, I don't think, you know, watching the Discovery Channel and watching dogs and stuff as a kid, I don't think I've ever witnessed a single act of consensual sex in the animal kingdom, to be honest with you. I think that pretty much every single time I've seen an animal have sex, it seems like the woman really hates it. And she's trying her darndest to buck that dude off her, and she just doesn't have the strength. You know, he usually just leaps on her from like a corner somewhere. So when I look at that, it's like, well, okay, they're social species, and they rape, and they're fine. You know, why is that a problem? You know, I just don't understand why that would be a problem, morality-wise. Same with murder. You watch a lot of pack species. Murder happens all the time, right? Honor killings happens all the time. When they're in a pack, if they're fighting over a female or they're fighting over food, murder happens, and nobody seems to care, right? It doesn't seem to be really an issue. So I look at it and I would say, well, you know, it's demonstrably untrue to look at that way. Another problem that I would have with it is we don't have, if he's right, if humanity has evolved that way, then we would have examples of cultures who tried and failed to have different morality, but we don't, right? So you'd expect to see cultures that tried to have rape to be a part of their natural society and just see it fail. But we don't see that. So I would just have to disagree with it. I would just say that's just not true. Beyond that, if we evolve that way, the question is why does it happen so often? Right? So if I evolve that way, why is, you know, one out of every two women in America sexually abused? You know, why is that true? If we evolve that way, I would expect to see what? None of it. Right? I would see less and less or absolutely none of it. So I would have to disagree that even the people who are doing it, though, they recognize that what they're doing is wrong, and society recognizes what they're doing is wrong. They just don't care. So beyond having a moral law, what we believe as Christians, which fully explains that, is that we have a moral law, but we have the choice to ignore it. Does that make sense? So that's how our dialogue with someone like that. But once again, if someone's just sinking in their heels, they're still going to be like, no. You know, like, no, you're wrong, man. You know, man, that's not true. You know, but it's like if you start with a premise and you come to conclusions that are consistently demonstrably false, at some point you might want to question your premise. Does that make sense? Like, at some point you might just want to be like, maybe my premise is wrong, but they won't do that. You know, and when we talk about rape, I mean, it's like the amount of rape that happens in society. It's like, there's got to be a lot of guys who are okay with it, you know, even though they know it's wrong. If I talk to the average person, they would say rape is wrong, yet it happens all the time. So why is it happening? Does that make sense? So we realize it's a law, but we just don't care, which demonstrates something about humanity that they don't want to admit to. Does that help a little bit? This is what I would say. Any other questions about that? Cool. The other problem is, in order to give up your belief in a moral reality or belief in absolute truth, you have to give up your foundation for reason, purpose, and value. You have to give up your foundation for everything, essentially, which is a bummer. Let me read you a quote from C.S. Lewis that illustrates this, I think, pretty well. This is from his book, Present Concerns. He says this: "The universe is a universe of nonsense, but since you are here, grab what you can. Unfortunately, however, there is, on these terms, so very little left to grab. Only the coarsest sensual pleasures. You can't, except in the lowest animal sense, be in love with a girl if you know, and keep on remembering, that all the beauties, both of her person and her character, are a momentary and accidental pattern produced by the collision of atoms, and that your own response to them is only your own psychic desires arising from the behavior of your genes. You can't go on getting any very serious pleasure from music if you know and remember that its air of significance is pure illusion. That you like it only because your nervous system is irrationally conditioned to like it. You may still, in the lowest sense, have a quote-unquote good time, but just insofar as it becomes a very good time, just insofar as it ever threatens to push you on from cold sensuality into real warmth and enthusiasm and joy, so far you will be forced to feel the hopeless disharmony between your emotions and the universe in which you really live." See what he's saying? If I disagree with absolute truth, then do I have meaning? Do I have value? No, I'm just an accidental collision of atoms, right? Another thing that any one of us who has ever experienced love, we know it's real. We know it's a real thing. We can't get away from that fact. But as an atheist, you have to look at it and be like, it's not real. It's just it's a psychopharmacological response in my nervous system. There's nothing real about it. Everything that I like about my wife or whatever, it's just because I really just want to mate with her and have kids. It's just a latent evolutionary thing. Does that make sense? There's no real depth to it. And no one could live that way. That's the whole point. No one could live that way. No one could actually believe that. You know that that's wrong. Once again, your premise is bringing you to conclusions you know to be false. You know that love is real. You know that music is beautiful. You know that art is beautiful. But does that make sense to you guys? You have to ignore things that you know to be true. You have to just, you guys who like music, you just have to look at it and be like, I only like it because my nervous system is conditioned to do it. There's nothing actually beautiful about it. You ever seen animals enjoy music? Parrots a little, you know? I mean, they sing a little off key and they're kind of lame. But I mean, like, have you ever played music around an animal? They seem pretty uninterested, right? They don't really seem to be terribly interested in it. There's something special about us, right? There's nothing survivable about music, enjoying music, that doesn't make us a better species. There's nothing great about liking movies or liking plays or liking literature or liking love. Like, there's nothing good about that that's going to make us better as a species. Yet, those are foundational things that are very important to us. Why? Because there's something in us that says, no, there is a such thing as beauty. No, there is a such thing. And in order to believe in beauty, in order to believe in goodness, you have to believe in absolute truth. Right? You can't believe in beauty unless you believe in an ultimate beauty. Because otherwise, it's just beauty's in the eyes of the beholder. Right? And if, Kim, if you think that cockroaches are beautiful, that's you, you know? I personally don't think they're beautiful, but if you love them and you want to have them as pets, that's okay, you know? And RJ, if you want to grow mold in your basement, that's all right, man. You know, there's nothing wrong with that, you know? And Art, if you want to get up and instead of playing actual chords for worship, if you just want to bang your guitar over your head, then, dude, that's music to you, man. You know, like, see, no one could live that way, is the point that C.S. Lewis is making. There is objective beauty. There is, when someone plays an E chord on the guitar, that's objectively an E chord. Does that make sense? That's objectively music to every human being on the planet. But if you played that in front of someone in China or India or whatever, they would listen to that chord and they would say, that's music. Right? If you just mindlessly strum on a guitar, no matter what culture you're in, they're going to be like, that's noise. You don't know what you're doing. I don't even know what instrument that is, but I know you know you don't know what you're doing, right? Yeah. It's crap. I'm not going to get on my high horse here, but I believe that the reason why music is the way that it is because of existentialism. It's because people are playing music and they're like, no, it's beautiful to me. No, it's not. You know it's not. It's demonstrably not music, you know, but they're like, no, dude, you know, we're hipsters and we like all sorts of beauty and we find it in weird places, right? No, dude, that's not beautiful. You're lame. You know, like that's, yeah, our society is weird now. But anyway, do you guys see what I'm saying, though? You lose your foundation for everything. Here's another thing that you have to lose. And this is very important because this is something that we all long for. This is something that's very important to all of us. I mentioned value. Every single one of us knows we desire to have value, meaning, or reason inside of our lives. We have to believe that we have meaning, that we have purpose, that we matter. That's what social media is, isn't it? It's everyone trying to have significance, right? The more followers you get, the more significance you feel like you have, right? You're trying to find significance. You're trying to find meaning. You're trying to find value. If I believe that there's no absolute truth, guess what? You have no value. If I'm an accidental collision of atoms, what does it matter if billions of other accidental collision of atoms think that I'm cool? If we're all just stardust, what does it matter if you think I'm cool or if you think I'm lame? I have no significance, I have no value, I will die one day, and I will be forgotten. That is the truth. But once again, something in us rebels against that. No, I have meaning, I have value, I have purpose. That's why you see all these atheists writing books, going on lecture tours, right? So it's like, why do you care? You're going to be forgotten. You're going to die one day. Who cares if you write a book? Who cares if humanity believes in a delusion or not? It doesn't matter, it doesn't impact you. You're just stardust, man. You're going to die. But there's something in them that says, no, I have value. No, I have meaning. No, I have purpose. But they have no foundation to believe it. As a Christian, what do we do? So an atheist, when they have that gnawing sensation, which we all have, right? We all have those gnawing sensations late at night where we think, do I actually have significance? Do I actually have value? Do I actually have meaning? Do I actually have purpose? An atheist has nothing to fight that. An atheist, when they feel those emotions late at night, you know what they have to do? They have to agree with them. If you're going to be consistent with your theology, you have to agree with them. You know what? You're right. I have no meaning. I have no value. I have no purpose. And I'm okay with that. It's the end of the world as we know it, and I feel fine, right? You guys ever hear that song? That's what he's talking about, right? It's just, who cares? You know, we're all destined to die. As a Christian, what do? When I am up late at night and I think, I have no value, I have no purpose, I have no beauty. Is there an objective reality I could look at? Yes, there is. I could go, like I said about art, I'm made in the image and likeness of God. Is God beautiful? Yeah. Jesus died for me. Does that make me valuable? If God was looking at your life and he says, you know what you're worth? You're worth my son. If God looks at me and he says, you are worth the most valuable thing in the entire universe, you are worth the death of my son, does that give me value? Yeah, it gives me value. If God puts his spirit inside of me, gives me the gospel, and tells me to share it with everyone I know, does that give me purpose? It gives me purpose. It gives me significance. I could look at my life, and using truth, I can absolutely quiet those voices in my heart. If I believe and accept absolute truth. And I believe that this absolute truth exists outside of me. You guys understand that? That I could look at my life and say, I don't care what I feel, I don't care what I think. The truth is that I have value. I have significance, I have beauty. Now, if you don't learn how to do that, then you're going to be a crappy Christian. You're going to be just as crappy as the atheist. You're not using the gift that God has given you, to put it another way. You believe in absolute truth, but you're not using it. So many Christians in our society today, like I told you guys, you're all influenced by existentialism. The church is influenced by existentialism. The church is very much influenced by existentialism. To such an extent that most Christians have made gods of their emotions. I cannot tell you how many times I've heard someone say this to me. They'll say, it's like, dude, I know that God is leading me to do this. And I'll say, how do you know? I prayed about it, and I got this overwhelming peace in my life. Well, that's great, man. But that's your emotions. That doesn't mean anything. That's vacuous. Hindus believe that. Hindus believe, and they pray, and they think that they have an overwhelming peace about what they believe. You understand that? The weirdos who did the Toronto blessing, who were running around the stadium barking like dogs and quacking like chickens, they had a pretty big peace about what they were doing. Is that right, though? Is that really what God wanted them to do? No. And here's the thing. If you deify your emotions like that, if I think, I know that God is leading me because my emotions say this to me, what happens when your emotions say something negative to you? What happens when your emotions say that you're guilty, that you suck, that you're a terrible person? If you haven't learned to listen to the truth of God in moments of guidance, how are you going to listen to the truth of God in moments of despair? You guys understand what I'm saying? So many Christians, the reason why they sink into pits of despair is because they've never learned how to objectively look at truth. You guys understand that? That I could pray about something, I say, I feel like this is what God is calling me to do. But unless I read the Bible and say, objectively, this is the right thing to do, because the truth tells me to do it, then it may or may not be the right thing to do. And by the way, I've had conversations like this, as you guys could probably tell, with people, with Christians. Usually their excuse to me is something like this. They'll be like, well, I know that God led me to do it because good things came out of it. So what? Good things came out of the crucifixion of Jesus. Are you going to look at the Pharisees who did it and say, they were being led by God? Those were guys who were really bound by the will of God, man. They really believed the truth. God works all things together for good for those who are called according to his purposes. God will work all things together for good. God using something for good doesn't justify it. Do you guys understand that? God using something for good does not mean that the decision that you made was good. It just means that God is good. And unless I learn how to objectively listen to the Bible and objectively listen to the truth therein, I'm never going to be able to quiet my emotions. Because despair is pretty loud. And there's no way you're going to be able to listen to the truth of the gospel if you haven't learned how to do it in the quiet times. You guys kind of grab that? You guys have any questions about that? How that looks practically, how to do that? That's right. I'm coming to the Bible and I'm saying, this is the truth. I don't care what my emotions say. What I read in here is the truth. Oh, we do that all the time. People subjectively look at the Bible all the time. Where people, I talk to Christians all the time where, you know, especially I deal with men who struggle with porn, right? And I'll deal with men who are questioning their salvation. And I'll be like, well, do you believe that Jesus died for your sins? Rose from the dead? They'd be like, yeah, but I keep sinning in this way, so I must not be saved. I'll be like, show me a passage that says that. And they'll be like, well, this one kind of alludes to that. And I'll be like, and they'll show me like a weird fuzzy passage that like 1 Corinthians 6, where it says like, he who sins sexually sins against his own body. They'll be like, bam, like, I sin against my own body. Well, Paul doesn't say that you're not saved. He says that you're sinning against your own body. I would agree with him. Sexual sin is really bad for you. You know, like, you are sinning against your own body. You shouldn't do that. But it doesn't say anything about you losing your salvation here. Does that make sense? Now, here's what they're doing. They're taking their emotions and they're projecting them on the Word of God. Do you understand that? In order to get to that passage in 1 Corinthians 6 that questions your salvation, you have to go through five chapters that affirms your salvation. And you have to ignore it. You have to be like, I know I'm chosen, I know I'm called, I know I'm elect, I know I'm good, I know that Jesus died for me, I know that He loves me, I know, oh, but this one right here, you know, and you pick out one verse amidst hundreds that maybe questions your salvation, and you're going to listen to that one over all these others. That's you subjectively reading the Bible. That's you reading into the Bible what you want to see. And not looking at the Bible and saying, this is my authority. I will read what it says and believe it. Do you understand the difference? Right? So, now when you say subjectively receiving truth, meaning that God will speak the truth to you in different ways, right? The way that I understand the crucifixion may be different than the way you understand the crucifixion, but I definitely don't mean that the truth of the crucifixion is subjective, right? Jesus died for me, He died for you. It forgives us all of our sins, it purifies us from all unrighteousness, period. You can't say, well, that's not how I look at the cross. Well, then you're looking at it wrong. You know, like it's objectively wrong. Do you understand that? So does that kind of help a little bit, clarify a little bit? All right, so I need to break that down in my life. If I realize that I'm a person that does deify my emotions, which, by the way, guys, I do, I need to recognize that to be true and pray that God will get rid of that, right? Over time, as I read His Word, I try to read out of it what He wants me to see. I don't want to read into it what I want to see anymore, because my personality is stupid, right? That also leads to another point, right? Those people who look at the Bible and say, well, I know the Bible says that homosexuality is wrong, but I don't like that. If you can't listen to that part of the Bible, what makes you think you're going to think that the Bible's authoritative on the other parts? Does that make sense? You can't pick and choose. Either the Bible is the authoritative Word of God and you believe all of it, or you're not going to be able to use it for anything. Right? So that's very important for us. We must believe all of it. It is our final authority. It is truth. And that's what John is getting at. All right, any other questions? Next point. When I believe in absolute truth, it feels dehumanizing, and it will ultimately make me feel worthless. Let's read a couple more verses. Verses 5 through 7. And now I plead with you, lady, not as though I wrote a new commandment to you, but that which was from the beginning, that we love one another. This is love, that we walk according to His commandments. This is the commandment, that as you have heard from the beginning, you should walk in it. Now, why do I say it's dehumanizing? Well, let's take the law. Let's take the law of the land that we all believe in, right? The law of the land is ultimately dehumanizing for this reason. You can never boast in it, and it will always hold you in contempt. A police officer will never pull you guys over because you're doing good things. You guys know that, right? He'll never pull you over and be like, you know what? I have never seen a more spot-on driver in my life. The way that you change lanes, Your 2-second follow rule textbook. Well done. You know, he's never going to do that. He's never going to give you gold star. That'll never happen. Because all the law can do is what? Condemn you. That is all the law has the ability to do. If a police officer pulls you over, you are wrong. Right? So you'll always feel a little bit dehumanized. So here's the problem. If I believe that the moral law is a law, that it's an absolute truth, that is a reality that I must live up to, it'll ultimately dehumanize me. For two reasons. Number one, I believe in a God who sits up in heaven and says, Peter, follow my commandments, and then you could have a relationship with me. That's dehumanizing. Imagine if you had a relationship with another human being like that, right? Some of you guys, let's say, RJ, you see a girl at school, you're like, man, she's kind of cute. I want to talk to her. Like, hey, you know, I like you. She's like, well, I don't really like you. So here's a list of things that you must change about yourself, and then I'll think about having a relationship with you. How would that make you feel? Pretty awesome. You know, I'm awesome. You know? Yeah. I'll do it. You know, I know. You'd, You'd feel like crap. She's only, even if you did all those things, here's the thing. If you enter into a relationship with her, it would be ultimately abusive. Because she would say, as long as you're keeping up with these things, I'll stay with you. But immediately if you fall out, I have the ability to just what? Reject you. A lot of religious people, that's their relationship with God. Where God delivers them a law and he says, live up to it. So people are working their butts off, trying to fulfill the law. They're like, man, I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. And they're living their lives and they feel dehumanized the whole time. And they're serving a God who could ultimately just say, hey, you know what? I don't really like you. We're done. You know, he just throw you out. That's not a loving relationship. That's dehumanizing by very definition. It'll take away your value. It'll take away your self-respect. You'll feel terrible if you have that kind of relationship with God. And when an atheist says something like that to me, I'm inclined to agree with him. They're like, you're right. If that was my view of God, you'd be absolutely correct. If that was my view of moral reality, you'd be absolutely correct. What's the truth that Christians believe that allows us not to do it? Jesus is the truth. Jesus said in John 14, I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but what? Through me. Jesus does not say, no one comes to the Father except for those who follow my commandments. Jesus does not say, I will show you the way, the truth, and the life. And if you do these things, you will come to the Father. He doesn't say that. He says, I am the way, the truth, and the life. So the way, the truth, and the life died for me. And that means that I don't believe in a God who sits up in heaven and says, you follow these commandments, then you can be with me. I believe a God who came down to this earth, lived the life that I should have lived, died the death that I should have died, and now, because of him, I can have a pure relationship with him. It means I have the... That's right, it's the gospel. That now Christians have unique ability to actually love God. We don't have a relationship with God where he says, you live up to my standards and I will have a relationship with you. We actually believe in a God who proposed to us. That Jesus died for us and says, I want a relationship with you. I changed for you. You don't change for me. I change for you. I become man for you. I become death for you. And now you become the righteousness that's in me. Do you guys understand that? Do you see how that's not dehumanizing anymore? That it's about relating to Jesus and loving Jesus, and that is our freedom? Now, as you love and as you relate to Jesus, he is the one who gives you the power to fulfill the moral law to begin with. You can't even do that. We lack the ability to do that. So Jesus fills us with the Spirit, and that Spirit enables us to fulfill the moral law. And what does fulfilling the moral law do to us? Is it good for us or bad for us? It's good for us, right? If there is a moral law, then we want to follow it. Or else we're going to die. We're going to kill ourselves. So if Jesus gives us the ability to do that, we should be thanking him, not be looking at him and being like, I guess I have to do this for Jesus, or else he's not going to love me anymore. You guys understand that? It totally changes the way that you guys fight your sin if you understand this. If you understand what kind of God you follow. Jesus, when he's talking to a woman at the well, John chapter 4, he asks her to bring her water, bring him water. And that's our concept of God, right? You do works for God and then he accepts you. And Jesus looks at her and he says, if only you knew who it was that asked you for a drink of water and you would ask him and he would give you living water. What's his point? I'm not like any God that you know. I will serve you, right? I will give you living water from my very blood. Isn't that cool? That's the kind of God we serve? No other religion believes in a God like that. That's why atheists are right about every other type of religion. But they're not right about what? Christianity. That's not an argument against Christianity. We agree with them. That's why the gospel is the gospel. That's why it's the good news. You guys grab that? All right. And I could also look at the atheist and be like, you're in the same spot as all the religious people. Why do I say that? Because you got to live for something. No one could live for nothing. No one could. Even an atheist has to live for something. You got to live for something. Now, whatever you live for, you could say it's your job, you could say it's your marriage, you could say it's your family, but whatever you live for, that's your God. And if you don't serve that God can't forgive you. Your job can't forgive you. If I live for my job, if I get fired, my job can't look at me and be like, Peter, I forgive you. It's okay that you got fired. If I get fired, I'm done. All my value, everything I thought about myself, is gone. If I live for my family, your family can't forgive you. If you let down your family, if you destroy your family, it's over. You lose it, it's gone. God is the only one who died for you. So if you live for Him, you could be forgiven if you fall short, if you fail. All right? No one else can do that. Nothing else can do that. So many Christians don't live for God, though. Your value system is not in God. It's in your beauty. It's in your career. It's in your family. It's in your marriage. It's in your whatever. And what Jesus is saying is, if unless you live for Him, you do not receive the gifts of the gospel. You don't receive the blessings that I'm talking about right now, of having that identity that can't be shaken or taken away from you. You guys grab that? That value system that's firm. That it doesn't matter what I see when I look in the mirror. It doesn't matter what happens with my job. Jesus loves me and that's enough. Okay? That's objective. Believing in objective truth does that for you. Let me move on to the last and final thing. Unless you guys have questions? Questions? No? All right. Verses 7 through 13. For many deceivers have gone out into the world who do not confess Jesus Christ is coming in the flesh. This is a deceiver and an antichrist. Look to yourselves that we do not lose those things we worked for, but that what we received a full reward. Whoever transgresses and does not abide in the doctrine of Christ does not have God. He who abides in the doctrine of Christ has both the Father and the Son. If anyone comes to you and does not bring this doctrine, do not receive him into your house nor greet him. For he who greets him shares in his evil deeds. Having many things to write to you, I did not wish to do so on paper and ink, but I hope to come to you and speak face to face, that your joy may be full. The children of your elect sister greet you. Amen. So verses 7 through 11 bring up a major point. This is something that atheists look at and they're like, that's stupid. So here's what they say. Believing in absolute truth leads to racism. It leads to superiority. It leads to elitism. Meaning, for me to say I have the truth means that you guys, what? Don't. So I have to believe that I'm better than you. Does that make sense? If I say I have the truth, I figured it out, then that means that you guys are wrong and you don't have it figured out, so I must be better than you. And we read this section, that's exactly what John says, right? There are many deceivers. There are people saying things that we're not saying. That's not truth. And they don't have the Father or the Son, meaning what? They're going to go where? They're going to go to heck. They're going to H-E double hockey sticks, you know? They're going to hell, right? So people look at that, they'd be like, man, look at Christianity. Look at how bigotry comes out of Christianity. That we think that we're better than other people. That we think that other people are going to hell and we're going to heaven. How could you possibly think that way? Well, there's another thing that you can think about. Once again, for the person who says that there is no absolute truth, that is what we already said, right? It's an absolute statement. So do they think that I have truth? No, they don't. They think I'm wrong. So do they think they're better than me? Yes, demonstrably so, right? I encourage you guys, watch a debate between an atheist and a Christian. And pretty much every Christian that I've seen, I haven't really seen a whole lot of Christians that are really bad examples that I could point out to you guys right now. I'm sure they're out there. I know for a fact they're out there, actually. But for the most part, when I listen to guys like John Lennox or Ravi Zacharias or Ken Ham or different debaters that have gone out in Christianity, you'll see that they treat the atheist with a lot of respect, right? John Lennox, he reads the books, right? When he debated Richard Dawkins, he's like, dude, I read your book. And he's talking to him about it. But you know what's really abundantly clear about Richard Dawkins throughout the debate? He does not respect John Lennox. There's no way you would talk to Richard Dawkins and he'd be like, oh yeah, I read John Lennox's book. I respect that guy. You know, there's no way he would do that. Why? Because he doesn't respect him. He thinks he's an idiot, right? He thinks that he believes in false things, and so he doesn't respect him. He doesn't even think about his arguments. Most of the time when you listen to the debate, Richard Dawkins is talking past his arguments. He's just like, well, whatever, that's stupid. You know, he doesn't even answer it. All right, so everybody believes in absolute truth, and every foundational belief system is going to lead to elitism. You will believe that you're better than other people if you think that you have the truth, with one exception, Christianity. You know why? How did we as Christians, how do we believe we found the truth? What happened in our lives? How did we get the truth? God gave it to us. Was it anything that you did? No. Did you find it? Are you smarter than the average person? That's how you figured it out? No. It is by grace you have been saved through faith, that not of yourself. It is the gift of God, that not of works, lest any man should what? Boast. So the gospel takes away what? Pride. If you really believe the gospel, you can't feel better than anyone else. Because the only reason why I believe and they don't is because what? God hasn't what? Shown him yet. I can't feel better than them. I can't possibly think I'm better than them. I'm not better than anybody. I can't have superiority to anybody. If I fulfill every law that is in the Bible, you know what the gospel still says about me? What do I deserve? Even if I perfectly fulfill all the law and I do everything I can, and I'm the best human being on earth, do I deserve heaven? No. If I am a terrible Christian, yet I put my faith in Jesus Christ, will I go to heaven? Yeah. Even if, will I go to the same heaven as Billy Graham and everyone else? Is it the same heaven? Yeah. So is there any superiority in the gospel? No. You see how that destroys pride? And that's why it's really offensive, by the way. No one likes the gospel. Like, I don't like that. It has nothing to do with my intelligence. It has nothing to do with my strength. It has nothing to do with my moral fiber or my domineering attitude or my authoritative demeanor. And I would be like, no, it doesn't. And we hate that. We're like, no, that's wrong. You know, I work so hard. It has to be something in me. It's not. It's nothing in you. All we have before God is filthy rags. And all he has for us is love. We don't deserve it. Christianity is the only belief system that you will not feel superior to other people if you have it. If you truly have it. The Christians who judge other people who are looking down at other belief systems, you know what's wrong with them? They don't actually what? They don't understand. Let me give you guys a case study. Galatians 2. The Apostle Peter failed. Hardcore, right? He started looking at the Gentiles and he's like, man, look at all these dirty Gentiles. They're eating non-kosher stuff. And they're not washing their hands before they eat. And they're doing all this weird stuff. So he started just hanging out with the Jews, and he's like, man, we wash our hands, and we eat like kosher stuff, and we follow the Bible. No hamburgers with cheese. Man, we don't do that. That's wrong. That's sin. And he's judging the Gentiles. And you know what Paul does? He doesn't come up to Peter and say, like, hey, dude, that's racist. That's wrong. Stop sinning, Peter. Because you know what? If I said that to someone, if I say, Caleb, you're racist, what does that make me? Not racist, right? If I'm racist too, I can't do that, can I? Right? So if I say you're racist, that immediately puts me on a moral superior ground. Does that make sense? The second I accuse somebody, I'm better than them. Paul doesn't say that. You know what he says? Don't you know that we had to receive the gospel too, Peter? So Paul doesn't look at him and say, you're being racist. He looks at Peter and says, Peter, the gospel's for us too. Think, Peter. Think until all the racism bleeds out of you. Understand the gospel until you understand that you're not better than anyone else. Think. Martin Luther King, right? A lot of Christians were using the Bible to justify racism. You know what Martin Luther King Jr. did? He didn't look at them and say, like, stop being Christians. That leads to elitism. You know what he said? He quoted Amos chapter 4. Let justice roll down like mighty hills. He's not saying, dude, Christianity is the problem. He's saying, you're just not listening to Christianity. That's the problem. If you actually listen to it, you wouldn't think that you're better than us. It's the fact that you're not thinking. Do you guys get that? Christianity is the only belief system that will not lead you to moral superiority. If you feel superior to other people, if you think you're better than other people, it's because you yourself don't fully understand what? The gospel. Grace. You don't fully understand it. And you need to think. You guys get that? Right? This all comes from absolute truth. This all comes from believing in absolute truth and the importance of it. You guys, any last questions? All right, let's pray, and then we have one last worship song. Dear God, thank you again for your truth. Thank you that we could believe in it. Thank you for all the things that it does for us.